You're listening to Fanboy Radio, the voice of comics.
Today's pre-recorded episode is number 206 with Stan the Man Lee.
Fanboy Radio is brought to you with a donation from Y2 Comics. Y2 Comics, located at 5276 Trail Lake Drive in Fort Worth, can be reached at 817-263-5888. And by Spiral, the new anime series from Funimation Productions, available on DVD November 16th. What are the Blade Children? What have they done to deserve this? Why do they believe Ayumu is their key to their salvation? Only one thing is certain. The Blade Children will stop at nothing to complete their destiny. Available on DVD November 16th. For more information, go to www.spiral.tv. For more information about Funimation Productions, you can find them at funimation.net. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Oliver.
Howdy, howdy, everybody. Well, as a matter of fact, this is Fanboy Radio. My name is Scott.
And I'm Oliver.
And this may be our biggest, most exciting show to date.
The only thing that would be larger than this is if you actually interviewed Iron Man for real.
Iron Man?
Like an actual Iron Man. That's the only way it could be any bigger.
If Tony Stark came to life and got his drunken butt up here.
And said, yeah, I was Secretary of State or whatever. And
but this is Stan Lee. This is Stan Lee,
it
Oliver.
It doesn't get any bigger than this.
How big is this in the grand scope of things?
This is, imagine Oprah Winfrey ate Nell Carter. That's how big it is. It's huge. It's magnificently monstrous.
But no, dude, I mean, we've been doing this, you know, for quite a few years now.
Yep.
And we specialize in comic book creators.
Right.
We get these people on so that they can broadcast to the world, so they can tell people who they are. Well, this is the one guy who doesn't need to tell anybody who he is.
Well, it's, I mean, if we were a music show, this would be not the equivalent of interviewing like the Beatles. This would be the equivalent of interviewing the guy who invented music.
Yeah, dude, it's great that we can have him on because we're huge fans.
I mean, of course.
Just gigantic, gigantic fans. Even to this day, there are some things that he's doing today that he'll talk about.
Right.
That, I mean, honestly, I'm surprised he revealed as much as he did.
Well, he's the only person who ever made me nervous.
What do you mean?
So much so that I said Captain America when I didn't mean to.
Yeah, be listening for that. That's early in the show. But no, I mean, he talks about, of course, the creation of the Marvel Universe and the characters that he was directly involved in.
Mm-hmm.
He also talks a little bit, quite a bit, much more than I thought, about modern comics today.
Well, it's surprising how important he was to the formation of what we know and love today. Because basically, without him, there's no now. And it's hard to say that because people will say, well, what about DC? And what about Superman? And Superman's great, don't get me wrong. Batman's great. But without the way he modernized comics with Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Avengers, you know, it's not there.
Comics weren't nearly as popular. I mean, they were on a downward spiral right up until Fantastic Four number one.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing people forget is, you know, what a shambles the industry was in.
Right.
Till Stan showed up.
That's like someone just showing up out of the blue today and bringing the sales back to the millions, you know?
Yeah.
It's tremendous.
Well,
and
not only that,
saved it.
But the things you see now, either they're direct ripoffs of what he did.
Right.
Or they're direct reactions to what he did, a changing of it from what he did to something new. So I think you can't talk about the industry without talking about him as the guy.
Right. So we talk about his influence today. We talk about, you know, his thoughts on some things that are happening today. He can't talk about everything. He's not as, you know.
There are some things we didn't ask him about on purpose.
Of course. And we know we'll get flack for that.
Well, I think, you know, it was at the time of the interview, it was just too new to ask about.
Right.
And they didn't want to talk about it. We didn't want to talk about it. So they have it.
But when he did get into the stuff he's doing now with his company, POW Entertainment.
Yes.
He did talk about J.J. Arms, which I do think is cool. And they're talking a little bit now. And some other projects now. And this movie that he's working on. I mean, wow. We get some nice insight on what Stan the Man Lee is all about. Now, Oliver, when did you start reading comics? It was, I mean, you know, this is way after.
To be honest, I don't remember when I mean,
how many concussions?
Well, I've had 7 concussions.
And after Britta hit you last week,
I've been knocked out more than Madonna's diaphragm. Whoa, everybody,
oh,
enjoy
hey.
The show.
Hi now.
But he's basically my first memory of comics, because the very first comic I ever read, which I had until recently, was an old, beaten-up, second-hand copy of Avengers number 6. Mm-hmm. It was the most beaten-down comic.
You still got it?
Well, it's somewhere, but it just got – it was abused.
The woman's dog didn't get to it, did
she? No, it didn't. But it got wet in a box accident, and so now I'm not happy. Well, it wasn't in great shape before that.
Right, because it's Avengers number 6.
But, yeah, but it's my pride and joy. And yeah. From that point onward, I basically read everything. You know, his run on Doctor Strange, he created the character, did all, you know.
We forgot to mention Doctor Strange.
Well, there was so much to talk to him about.
There's so much to talk about. He's a busy guy.
And that's the thing about it. You know, he, you know, not to knock Straczynski, because the new Strange miniseries, I'm reading that.
What do you think of that?
I
mean, we're driving our listeners crazy not getting to Stan Lee. But what do you think about Strange by Straczynski?
Not
strange
and
enough.
And I'm like Doctor Strange fan number one. Mm-hmm. I went back and I reread all those old books, and it's just, it's amazing how his personality, Stan Lee's personality, shone through in those books he was writing. And I think that's something that's undervalued now. People are so into, is he a good writer? And I'm like, well, does his personality come through
in
his writing?
I completely agree with that. I completely agree. His dialogue was so dynamic and exciting. I mean, I'll reread my Essentials.
Uh-huh.
And really feel the magic at that time. The guy had such momentum. Part of me feels like, you know, he could come up with just about anything, and it would have been great.
Well, there was a time back, you know, during the 60s when he basically did come up with anything, and it was amazing how much stuff he was able to make work.
Yeah.
That you think back on it, you're like, well, who the, you know, if somebody else walked up with that idea, you'd be like, what are you talking about?
Right. If Stan Lee didn't create the Hulk, would it really last this long? Because it's a pretty one-dimensional idea, but just the fact that it had the branding and the excitement behind it. I mean, everyone always talks about modern-day comics, people on the internet, people in comic conventions being huge self-promoters.
Right.
And it gets on a lot of people's nerves, and banners on message boards and stuff like that drives people crazy. But this is the ultimate self-promoter.
Oh, he was the original self-promoter.
Absolutely.
Everything of those old Marvel books smacks of him.
Yep.
You know, and even down to the Excelsior and the Nuff Said and you know, the editorial comments, you know, he's the guy.
Right. Well, we won't waste any more of your time here. We've got 30 minutes of Stan Lee Gold here on Fanboy Radio,
the voice of comics. How are you doing, Mr. Lee?
Well, that depends how you treat me.
Oh.
I'm doing fine, thanks.
We are talking with Mr. Stan Lee. I am trembling in my boots, Oliver.
And well, you should be.
I cannot think of a single guest I have wanted more than Mr. Stan Lee.
Well, I mean, we do a show about comics, and if there's anybody who's responsible for comics, it's Stan Lee. We're not talking to the leaves, we're not talking to the branches, we're talking to the roots of the tree right now.
I like your attitude.
Why, thank you.
The creator of the Marvel Universe, one might say.
Yes.
Spider-Man, Incredible Hulk, X-Men, Daredevil.
Avengers, Captain America, just...
No, I didn't create Captain America.
I just said Captain America because I was overly excited.
That was Jack Kirby and Joe Simon.
That's right.
But you're pretty much straight on the other stuff.
Well, I'm such an entirely huge fan of yours, of course, and my first question for you is, when you were younger, before you actually started doing creations, What particular comic books, or radio series, or serials influenced the creation of the Marvel Universe?
Well, I think everything. Everything I ever read, heard, or saw influenced everything I ever did. We're all that way. You know, whatever we read or see in a movie or hear in conversation, it sticks in our subconscious. And we never know when it'll come out. But the movies and the books and things, you know, when I was a kid, I saw King Kong and I saw Jekyll and Hyde and Frankenstein. And I loved that kind of stuff. And I read, of course, everything. I read H.G. Wells and I read Mark Twain. I read fairy tales. I read whatever I could lay my hands on.
We know some of the obvious associations. Incredible Hulk, Dr. Jekyll, and Mr. Hyde.
That was a combination
okay.
of Frankenstein and Jekyll and Hyde, because the movie Frankenstein with Boris Karloff, I always felt that the monster was really the good guy. He didn't really want to hurt anybody, but those idiots with torches kept chasing him up and down the hills. And then I decided to give him a double identity like Jekyll and Hyde, so it was a combination of the two.
I personally am a hardcore Fantastic Four guy, though.
Well, that's as it should be.
Now, I hear in the upcoming Fantastic Four movie, you have a much more...
It's more substantial than a cameo.
Right.
Oh, well, I'm practically the main character. It's a pivotal role.
There you go.
I am on screen for at least 7 or 8 seconds as Willie Lumpkin, the mailman.
Oh, all right.
I was hoping they'd want me to play Reed Richards, but, you know, these casting directors, what do they know?
Well, I'm starting to see a pattern here. I personally think the more exposure on screen Mr. Stan Lee has, the better the success.
Oh, yeah, it usually works that way. I mean, why else would anybody go to the movies?
Exactly. Now, when you were writing and doing editing for Marvel Comics, which job was more rewarding? Was it being a writer and actually creating the dialogue, the captions, or editing and controlling some of the stories?
Well, the editing was the easiest part because I usually was, you know, I was the writer and editor and art director. And since I'm my favorite writer, it was very easy for me to edit what I wrote because I liked everything I wrote. So there wasn't much editing necessary.
Now, when you were coming up with the writing for all those great books back then, do you feel that your style, what kind of came to be known as the Marvel style, where you would write the plots and then have the artists do the art, then come back and do the dialogue. Do you feel that led to a more dynamic style? Because it seems like now everybody wants to write these detailed scripts.
Cinematic.
And it gets more cinematic, and I don't know.
Well, it was better for me. First of all, I could work faster that way, and I had a lot of artists that I had to keep busy at the same time. Secondly, these artists I worked with were very creative people. I mean, Jack Kirby was as good a writer as you'll find anywhere, but he wrote with pictures. And the same for Ditko, and the same for Romita, and the same for Buscema and Colan, and all of them. And by letting them, by just telling them the basics of what I wanted, and letting them do it their own way, I was getting the best that they had to offer, and I was doing it as well as I could, so we were combining both of whatever abilities we had instead of just my own abilities.
I'm a big fan of continuity. I'm a big fan of having a Marvel canon, if you will. Mm-hmm. Whenever you've read comics, maybe in the 60s up till now, and you said, you know what, I would never do that. I wouldn't let that in. Do you ever feel, maybe I should write a letter to these guys? Do you have any editorial?
Well, my answer may surprise you. But I'm always incredibly impressed with what other writers do. I know how hard it is to come up with ideas. And when I see something that somebody else has done, and it's a little bit different or a little bit unusual, and he's changed things, I usually figure, gee, that's pretty clever. I admire him for thinking of that or having the courage to do it. Hmm. I very rarely feel, I don't like that, I'm going to write a letter. If I don't like it, I just turn to the next story and forget about it.
That's smart. I can't ever get away with that. I always have to scream and shout on the internet. Now, costumes in comics are incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, Marvel experienced a small fad where costumes, especially in the X-Men, weren't really used anymore.
Uh-huh.
How important are capes and masks?
Well, when I was doing comics, they were very important. And the best example I can give you, the first issue of the Fantastic Four, which was the first of our new style superhero books, was very well received by the public. We knew we had a hit as soon as it went on sale, and we saw the sales figures. Everybody was buying it. And the fan mail started pouring in, and the fans said they loved it. But they almost all of them wrote the same thing. We think it's a great book. Congratulations, blah, blah, blah. But if you don't give them costumes, we'll never read another issue. So I don't need a house to fall on me.
Now, character deaths are also something that comes in and out of style.
Yes.
I guess one might say. As a writer, you never put in too many deaths.
No, I only killed, that I can remember, two people, Captain Stacy.
Yep.
In fact, I think only one person. I didn't kill Gwen. I think Jerry Conway killed Gwen.
Right.
I thought for a second you may have killed Wonder Man from the Avengers, but that wasn't you. I think that was Roy Thomas.
No, that wasn't me.
Okay, good.
I can barely remember who he was.
Well, characters seem to be going left and right. Do you have any kind of opinion on...
Well, I think maybe the writers are a little more bloodthirsty than I was. I don't know. I think it's silly to kill a character. I mean, it takes so long to dream a character up, and if he's popular and you, or she, and you finally have one that the reader likes, why kill him?
That's right.
I mean, I would have hated it if A. Conan Doyle had killed Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Now, when you were at Marvel,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't just so much that there was a Marvel style. It was your style that was coming through, and it wasn't. It almost was like we were getting to peer inside your head, especially in the letter columns and in the style, you know, the editor boxes and things like that. Do you think that's missing from comics today? It's almost like the creators, we get no taste of what they're about in the
story. Well, you'd be a better judge than me because, in all honesty, I don't read the comics anymore. I don't have time for it.
Mm.
But if that is the case, if it is missing, I think it's a shame. I enjoyed trying to inject as much personality as I could into the books. I enjoyed trying to let the readers know me and the artists and the writers and feel as if we're all a bunch of friends mm-hmm. enjoying sort of an inside joke together that the outside world isn't privy to.
Hmm.
And I think that had a lot to do with the success of Marvel as well as the stories. So if that isn't the case anymore, I'm sorry.
I really miss your columns. It wasn't, I guess, about just 5 years ago whenever
mm-hmm.
you just stopped. I mean, I was reading comics whenever I was in college, and you were still writing the columns. Those were so great.
Yeah, I think at some point they just said they didn't need them anymore.
Oh,
I mean, I would have kept writing them. I enjoy doing it.
Absolutely. Now, the art today has also changed dramatically. One of my favorite things that you wrote was in Spider-Man number 1, at the very back, you showed off all of the crazy things you could do with Peter Parker.
Oh, yeah.
You could make him, you know, turn his web into a parachute or a net, and it just showed the wide possibilities of what you and Steve Ditko could do with the character.
Mm-hmm.
But these days, it seems like the art has become very hyper-realistic. Does that put a little forced limitations on the style?
I don't know. As I say, I don't have time to read the books, but sometimes
you.
I'll thumb through a book. And it seems to me as if sometimes more attention is paid to the artwork than the story. I don't know if that's good or bad, frankly. I know there are a lot of fans of the artwork, and a lot of people love the artwork, and they love certain artists, and they'll buy a book for certain artists, just as they will for certain writers, just as some people will go to the movie to see a certain star or because they like a certain director. So I don't know. The artwork certainly now is different than it was. The pages look more like paintings. The colors, for the most part, are heavier and richer, and the comics that I thumb through have a different look than they had years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They look more. It looks like the artwork is much more expensive.
That's true.
Yeah.
The future of comics. Everyone's asking, you know, where is it going to go, and is the internet going to play a big role? What do you think?
I really am in no position to know any more about it than you or anyone else. And I think, unfortunately, when I was doing comics, there wasn't much competition. You'd buy a comic or you'd go to a movie. There wasn't much else you could do, or read a book. But today, I mean, you've got the internet, you've got video games, you've got so many other things that compete for people's attention that comic books are just one of many things that can give somebody enjoyment.
I guess back in the heyday, the only true competition you had was DC.
Yeah.
Now, did you try to create conflict, not necessarily conflict, but active competition with the DC characters and creators?
Well, I tried to have fun with it.
Right.
I tried to make it seem as if we were always feuding. I referred to them as Brand X. And but actually, we were all friendly. I mean, the guy at that time who was running DC was Carmine Infantino, and he and I used to meet for lunch or for a drink at least once a month at a nearby pub. We were friends, but it was more interesting for the readers if they felt we, and for me, if it seemed like we had an ongoing battle.
Right.
You know, nowadays, if you have a competition or another company that's involved with trying to defeat you, they will take your character and make a thinly veiled ripoff of it. And
oh, really?
I was really, I don't want to say any names, but when you were doing it, then there never seemed to be that. You know, there's never been, you know, like the Marvel version of Superman, the Marvel version. You guys always tried to be very original. I mean, how difficult was that for you?
Wasn't difficult at all. I specialize in originality. Hey, incidentally, I don't know if this is on the radio or if you're going to print this, but if you print any of these dumb things I say, please say he said it with a laugh so I don't come across as the most swell-headed guy in the world.
Well, it's for the radio, and you just did.
I'm a huge fan of course, everything that Marvel has come up with. They definitely seem to be, like Oliver said, rooted in your characters. They try and create new ones, sometimes relatives of characters that you've created, or they make some successes, like Wolverine. I don't think
Wolverine was a great invention.
Yeah, you weren't directly responsible for it.
Nope, I had nothing to do with it, I'm sorry to say.
Well, it's one of the few ones you didn't have
exactly.
Something to do with. And the thing about it is your characters have resonated for so long when other characters have come and gone. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Maybe I was lucky and I just put in the kind of elements that readers relate to. I tried to make them seem like real people. And I tried to give them their own little hang-ups and personality traits. And I worried a lot. I mean, I worked really hard on them. For instance, in the Fantastic Four, I don't know if anybody ever noticed, but I would never have Reed Richards say anything the way Johnny Storm might have said it or the way Ben Grimm might have said it. Reed had to have his own way of talking. And the Thing had to have his own way of talking, and the same. And I would never have Daredevil say anything the same as the way Iron Man might have said it. I mean, to me, dialogue is incredibly important, and speech patterns are important. And I used to feel you should, in the perfect story for a comic book, you should be able to cover up the drawings and read the dialogue balloons and just, by the phraseology, you should be able to tell which character is talking. And I don't know if every writer gives that the same attention.
When you wrote comics in the 60s, pretty much every one that you wrote were intended for the whole family.
Oh, yeah.
I guess there's been a major change then these days.
Why is that?
From my perspective, even the ones that seemingly are for everybody tend to lean towards the older audience. Maybe that's because that's where the bulk of the audience is now or something?
I see. Well, I think the older readers now probably outnumber the younger ones.
Right. to me that seems, you know, warning, danger, I hope we don't all die out. I really want to get someone with your kind of perspective to, I don't know, I'd love to see more new characters. I've read of J.J. Arms that POW Entertainment is working on that seems incredibly huge potentially for kids. And that's refreshing, because there hasn't been a lot of comic book characters lately that are aimed for kids to enjoy.
Now tell me, what did you hear about J.J. Arms?
I just got a press release. I'm sorry. Are you guys not talking too much about it?
Well, I didn't know the press release was out yet, so that's good if it is.
Yeah,
no, that's fine.
Well, it seems like a great idea. Can you talk at anything about J.J. Arms?
Well, we're going to do it as a, you know, I'm trying to remember what. I think we're doing it as a DVD. And, we may be doing it as a movie, an actual live-action movie. I think, yeah, that's what it is. I have so many damn projects going on, it's hard to keep track of them. Now, J.J. Arms, we're going to do it, the story of his life, fictionalizing it a little bit. But really, based on him and what he's done, it's going to be a movie, and I think it'll be great.
Well, I think it's such a great story. Like you said, even in reality, he lives a comic book life.
Oh, yeah, he is a superhero in real life, so it's not hard to use him as a model.
So this is coming out of POW Entertainment.
That's right.
And tell us, what is POW Entertainment? It's your company.
Well, it's a new company I formed, and I'm sure you've already guessed that the letters POW stand for Purveyors of Wonder.
Nice.
And we're doing television shows and animation and movies and DVDs. And we're even working with a company called Videator that has how do you describe it?
The mobile phone technology?
You know more about it than I do. Yeah. And so I'm going to provide stories and shows and things for their mobile phones.
That sounds so cool.
In fact, I was with them all day yesterday planning what we're going to do. Hey, how do you pronounce that? Is it mobile phone or mobile phone?
Mobile.
Either one, is it?
Well, it depends. Once you pass the Mason-Dixon line, it's mobile.
Thank you.
Another big issue in comics today is whether or not continuity is important. And you made an incredibly rich tapestry between your stories. They were all set in the same city, in New York City for the most part. And the characters interacted very subtly at times.
Yeah.
And sometimes, Spider-Man number 2, Spider-Man walks up to the Fantastic Four and asks to join. So
that's right.
They are incredibly binding. Today, it seems like they're getting away from that. How important are crossovers and events like that to comics?
Well, to me, they were important. But, of course, to be fair, it was easier for me to do it because I was writing just about all the stories. So it was easy for me to say, I think in this story I'll have Charlie meet Sam or whatever it was.
Right.
These guys are all writing their own things by themselves. And unless the editor is planning all these things out and has them do it, it's much more difficult. I don't like continuity changes myself. For example, I wouldn't like, getting back to Sherlock Holmes, because that's the easiest example, I wouldn't like to read one story of Sherlock Holmes that was written by a new writer in which he didn't live in London, but he lived in Berlin, and he was short and fat. I mean, to me, I like consistency. That's the only way you feel you get to know a character. Now, if in one story he moves somewhere else or he goes on a diet, okay, but but these abrupt changes that sometimes crop up in comics, I just don't think they're doing the character any good. I think they just confuse the reader and they tend not to make the character a real person in the mind of the reader.
Now, we're running out a little bit of time, but I just had to ask for myself, I'm a big, as I said, Fantastic Four fan and Spider-Man fan, in the movie and now in the regular Marvel comic book series, Spidey's webs are now organic.
Yeah.
And you were a producer, of course, on the Spider-Man movies.
Well, that's just an honorary title.
Oh.
I really had nothing to do with it.
Okay, well, did you have any thoughts on the organic shooters?
Well, you know, Jim Cameron was supposed to do Spider-Man originally some years ago. And he also wrote a treatment in which Spider-Man's shooters were organic because he felt it was better that way, as a movie. I was going to say cinematographically, but there's no such word.
It's a standard.
Cinematically, maybe.
Yeah.
And then Sam Raimi had the same idea that for a movie it worked better. I mean, I have to feel they were right because the movies were such great hits, and it didn't bother me at all watching the movie. So I think, see, I think Jim felt, and Sam must have felt too, you're not going to get an audience to believe that some teenager could put something on his wrist that would shoot that far and enable him to swing and would stop a train from going off a track. It would maybe, but if it's organic like a spider's, if it really comes out of him, then I assume that they felt that was more believable. I would not have done it that way if I were doing the movie, but probably because I wouldn't have been smart enough to think of that.
Well, I just miss viewing Peter Parker as a huge genius, like you wrote him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they didn't really play that up, and that is one element I would have played up. He was he wasn't just a student in a science class, but he was a scholarship science student, and that stood him in good stead. There's a corny expression, an old-fashioned one. Stood him in good stead. I don't know what the hell it means. Stead.
Well, it's not, it
have
sounds
you ever read things and it suddenly occurs to you, what do those words mean?
Yeah.
Stood him in good stead? I'm going to look up stead someday.
Well, I got a good question then. When did it hit you that your catchphrase, because you came up with so many great battle cries.
Excelsior!
Where did Excelsior come from in your mind?
Oh, it's a long story. I used to end my soapbox column with expressions. I'd end up by saying, okay, until next time, hang loose, or face front, or enough said, or anything I could think of. And I found after a while those expressions were cropping up in our competitive magazines.
Should have trademarked those bad boys.
So I figured I'm going to come up with something that they won't know what the hell it means, and they won't be able to spell it. And I just hit on the word Excelsior, which is a wonderful word.
Oh, it's great.
Sounds like Excalibur, and it means upward and onward to greater glory, and what could be better?
In the age of email, when I got an email from Stan Lee, and he said, Excelsior, Stan, I had to print it out and frame it right there.
Well, bless your heart.
Absolutely loved it. There's another huge, huge man in comics past that I'm not sure if you were close with or not. He just passed away this morning.
Yeah,
Will Eisner. Were you close with Will?
No. I'm sorry I wasn't. I knew him. We had shared a lot of panels together at conventions. And there was a time when I hoped I could get him to work for us. I had contacted him, and he came to the office, and we talked. But he wanted to do his own thing, and I could understand that. Mm-hmm. He was a very talented guy, and he was a very nice guy. I liked him very much, but we weren't close. I mean, we didn't socialize or anything, mainly because he mostly lived in Florida, and I was in New York. So it was kind of difficult to go bowling every night.
Right. Yeah, just had to ask. I definitely knew that you knew of him. So.
Oh, sure.
Well, let me kind of end on this note. This is really just a greedy question for me. I love all the comics, and I haven't really seen a comic that you wrote in the past that became a classic where you had a leading lady, a female protagonist. Is there something about comic books in that? In the movies, both Catwoman and Elektra haven't seemed to do too well at all. Do you see, was there any kind of success theory that there needs to be a more balanced series of characters on the screen or in the comic books?
You mean we should have more females?
Well, I don't know. Did you stay away from that style because it wasn't successful for some reason?
No, not at all. Okay. I think it wouldn't be hard to get a successful female. I think if I always wanted to play up the Black Widow more, but at that time, the people who were above me weren't interested. You see, people in comics in the past, not so much now, I think, but they felt that comic books are read by boys, and boys don't want to read stories that feature girls. It's the old story. You remember the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew?
Yep.
Well, boys would read the Hardy Boys, and a girl could read the Hardy Boys. But no boy is going to read Nancy Drew because they'd feel it's a little bit sissy-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the Black Widow, I almost sold that as a television series, in fact. I always liked that. And I'm working on a movie now featuring a female heroine, which is a redundancy. But and I think that'll be very good.
Cool.
It's called Nightbird. And if we get the actress that I want, I think it'll be a hit.
Awesome.
I think a story featuring a woman has every chance of being as successful. You just have to make it good. I think, again, I did not see Catwoman. I didn't see Elektra. But certainly the critics didn't think they were very good movies.
Right. I'm a big fan of Fantastic Four. I cannot wait for this movie. I'm looking for your huge part this time. And I tell you, another thing, and I'll just leave it on this. I just let you know, your DC Just Imagine series.
Uh-huh.
I really, really like that. I thought that,
good.
Especially how you were able to just tell a complete story without, you knew what you were trying to do. It wasn't trying to create an open-ended universe or anything. You were just telling a beginning, middle, and end of a story, and I really liked that.
You know what was the toughest thing about that?
What's that?
Trying to get stories that were different enough from the original, because I loved the original. I mean, for example, I don't think you could improve on Batman the way it was originated, and yet I had to do something different, and I felt terrible about it, because I think that the way Bob Kane did it was better. You know, and the same with Superman, and the same with, I mean,
that's
the originals were great, and here I had to try to think of something. It's like somebody trying to do a different Spider-Man. It
right.
would be hard to do.
Yeah, we all
but
know.
Anyway, it was fun doing it.
Right. Well, I liked them, and I was wondering, any possibility we could see your actual writing script in comics again?
Probably not, because I'm so busy doing what I'm doing, and also because they haven't been beating down the door begging me to.
Well, that's their loss.
Yeah, that's their loss.
But Stan, thank you so much for your time. This has been a really good treat to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. And let me tell you, I've done a million interviews, and I didn't even want to do this one because I'm so busy. But you guys are great. I mean, you ask good questions, and you're about as good as any interviewers I've ever had.
Wow.
Well, thank you very much.
So it was really a pleasure.
Wow. Well, that
okay,
means
and good luck to you, fellas.
Thank you.
Right. Bye.
There you have it, 30 of the finest minutes with Stan the Man Lee.
Yep.
Excelsior, Oliver, excelsior.
It's so funny because he has been around since the beginning, basically. I mean, and...
Start of the Silver Age.
It's funny to think of him because, first of all, he's been around a long time, yet he's still just as sharp, just as lucid as ever, and just as intelligent and witty. And he was talking about not writing anymore because he's so busy doing other things, but... If he wrote something now, I have to imagine it would be just as good.
I'd buy it.
Yeah.
I'd buy it in a heartbeat. I think the last thing he did was the comic book adaptation of Spider-Man the movie, the Sam Raimi movie, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And it was really good. So it was sad to hear him say that he probably won't be coming back to actually scripting comics. And that's sad. But I think we were driving a few people crazy when we started getting into comic book reviews before the Stan Lee interview.
Yeah.
We mentioned Straczynski.
Yes.
And I think that Stan Lee... after the interview, probably would approve of just about everything that they're doing. I know, maybe I was fishing for something from him saying, I can't believe they did that with Gwen Stacy. And the,
well,
I don't know. Maybe I was just looking for a conflict, like I always do. But I think that actually he's probably very comfortable with it going on a completely different direction, which surprises me. I mean, for me, if I was Stan Lee... I'd be collecting every single of, I don't know, maybe after a couple years of really being scared of what happens to his own characters, he just relaxed and moved away from it.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of distance he's gotten now that, you know, he's backed away from everything. But mm-hmm. I also think, you know, it's hard for him because you have to remember for all those years, he was kind of, he was there at their, you know, leisure. He didn't own the company, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was just kind of...
He was a company man, yeah.
Yeah, and so I understand.
Yeah. So it wasn't actually owned by Stan Lee, so what are you going to do? But we didn't get into the litigious part.
No, we didn't.
And just recently, he's got good news on his end, because he did win the lawsuit. We're all hoping behind him that it doesn't get appealed, but that he will be getting some revenue from the Marvel movies, the ones that he originally created.
Well,
and I think that's a good thing.
Well, one of the sad one of the sad things about the comic book industry is the way that the people who kind of started the industry and who are the giants that everybody looks up to kind of were, you know, they were dismissed. It's like, thanks for Superman. Here's a nickel. Now go away.
Well, yeah. Simon and Schuster for one. Mm-hmm. Jack Kirby for another, man. That's just a tragic story.
And so it's kind of tough. And so it's a good thing to see that he's getting some benefit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, but, you know, there'll be people who'll say all kinds of things about it.
Right. Well, we couldn't have had a better interview with him. And unfortunately, we didn't want to take up too much of his time because he's out there creating great characters and adventures for us to enjoy.
Well, and from what he was saying, his schedule's so incredibly busy, it was cool that he just took some time out to talk to us in the first place.
Absolutely. But today, let's stay focused. It is Comic Book Day this Wednesday. There are some great, great comics that came out this past month that we're going to be talking about. Some great comics that come out today. We mentioned J. Michael Straczynski.
Yes.
He's got an amazing title out right now called Supreme Power. And this is probably on the top five list of both of ours, Oliver.
Oh, definitely. And the thing about Supreme Power, we were kind of talking a little bit about Strange earlier. And Sam Barnes does the actual writing on that, and he's plotting. But the difference between these two books are night and day. I could read Supreme Power all day long. I think it's one of the greatest books out right now.
Now tell us what it's about, because a lot of people who might be intimidated, it's already up to what, like 18?
Yeah, it's number 14.
Number 14, sorry. It's already up to number 14. It isn't set in the Marvel Universe,
no.
Is it?
No, it's not. It's kind of a reimagining of the Squadron Supreme.
Gotcha.
But you don't have to know any of that. In fact, I didn't when I started reading it. It's just well written, and it's just really cool, and it's the height of the kind of hyper-realistic superhero that's, you know, kind of in fashion right now.
Some more old-school guys might recognize the Squadron Supreme as being kind of like Marvel versions of the DC characters that kind of invaded the Marvel Universe.
Right.
This is their original universe before they made that transition into the Marvel Universe. So it's like their origin story.
Yes, but totally their origin story, but totally new characters from the only things that are the same are the names.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Because even the power archetypes have been played with a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's definitely one of the best ones out there right now.
Did you ever read Rising Stars?
No, I didn't.
Now, it's the same kind of thing. Any fans of Rising Stars, which is Joe Michael Straczynski's original heroes, where they were kind of formed from like a meteorite hitting the Earth and created just very realistically, I guess, hyper-realism again, it's the same kind of feel. And it feels like, you know, the government's involved in these superheroes, and it's a wild ride, and I can't recommend it anymore. Right now, we're getting finally to the different super-powered beings, the different superheroes finally interacting with each other. So we're getting some serious combat going on.
Oh, yeah. You know, I hate to be vague about it, but you need to go back and read them all.
Yeah.
They're that good. And
there's a couple trades out right now, I think.
Yeah. But I really like the way that he's dealt with the story of Hyperion and Blur and Nighthawk and just...
Yeah, Blur and Nighthawk are great characters, which I didn't even bat an eye at back when they were Squadron Supreme. Now, they're the most rich, deep characters in comics, one of them.
Well, and plus the fact that the original Nighthawk had one of the worst costumes in comics.
It did, yeah.
It really looked like a Shriner had exploded. And so thanks for fixing that, at the very least.
I tell you, there are quite a few people that kind of capture the Stan Lee spirit that are still around in comics today. And one of the brand new young guns at Marvel, not an artist, but a writer, Robert Kirkman, is simply amazing. And he has a very fun, personality-filled style that really is very similar to Stan Lee. And his series, MTU, Marvel Team-Up, combines two different heroes or groups of heroes, like Doctor Strange and Fantastic Four, Iron Man and the Hulk, and it puts them together in some kind of adventure. Now, the cool thing is it's different combinations of heroes every single issue, but the story is ongoing. It still connects all the dots. And so we have usually pretty big events that happen in the Marvel Universe where all the heroes can participate, but they're each spotlit at different times. So, like, the adventure carries over to different heroes. And it's so much fun, and it's so refreshing, and this is the big thing, Oliver. It ties into continuity. It talks about the things going on in Astonishing X-Men. It talks about the things happening in New Avengers. It does it in a way that respects and lifts up and talks about the importance of the other books. And no other Marvel book is doing that at all.
It's such a simple idea. But I don't know why no one thought of it before. Tie all the stories together.
Yeah.
You can team up all the different characters you want to, but if the story kind of has an overflowing arc, it gives people a reason to stick with the book, even when it's not the two favorite characters they ever had.
And the very first issue was Spider-Man and Wolverine.
Right.
And they get so much mail about, please don't have the next issue be Spider-Man and Wolverine. And that's their big joke in the letters columns.
Uh-huh.
I guess letter columns are back. They snuck them back in, I guess because a lot of people were complaining about it, like us. Uh-huh. But they're back, and they're really funny. So, you know, we'll see.
It's another chance for the book to have some kind of character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's something that was kind of forgotten lately.
Right.
Is the personality.
Yeah.
The book has got to have some kind of personality.
Right.
I think Quesada's trying to bring that back.
Yeah. Now, you talked about how simple MTU is.
Right.
On the other end of the scale, at the other publishing house, DC, not so simple story to tell, Identity Crisis.
Yes.
Number seven, the very end, wrapped up about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
I think it's safe to talk about it.
Okay.
Now, this is a spoiler warning. If you haven't read it, if you're rereading it now that they're relaunching it, skip a minute.
Well, I'm not going to say skip a minute. Just go like this, la, 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 for the next minute.
The killer is, dot, 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 the Adam's wife.
Right.
And what a twist that was. I was thinking it was a psychotic killer. I thought it was still going to be Dr. Light at the end because he's the one that has the most reason to really hurt these heroes and their families because they erased his memory. Mm-hmm. But the idea that these heroes are so busy with their alter egos, with meeting up in the moon at the watchtower or whatever, that they don't have time for their family, so there could be so much jealousy that a murder might take place inside these social circles. It was so cool. It's such a new idea.
Okay, but it did bring up something for me. Not that I'm saying it wasn't good.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought it was good, and I thought it was handled well, and I thought, you know, wow, I didn't think of that person, and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But my question is, if she did all this,
yes,
accidentally almost, you know, I'm not saying she's like some arch villain or something, but why isn't the Atom more powerful? Because she basically had the entire superhero community.
Well, now remember, she has her little black book that has every JLA member, their identities, you know, their phone numbers. As the Atom, and having the powers, she could just, you know, become atomic size, go into the phone line, pop out, and hide all the evidence and microscopically.
Yeah.
So that was the whole thing. I mean, they couldn't find any traces of anything because it was so minute. Now, my problem is just about every time I've seen, and DC's famous for having their characters fight each other all the time, Adam and Superman, I've seen a couple issues where they do clash, but Superman's got that super sight, man. He
right.
can see microscopically, you know. He's done brain surgery using X-ray, heat vision, and microscopic sight, you know. I don't really buy it, you know. I'm not sure. Superman should have found out. He's been able to see that stuff. Maybe she went so small. That's the explanation. But
or maybe he didn't think to look for that.
I don't know. They were pretty thorough at the first part, but I really liked it. But here's the deal. More important than the mystery and the killer is what the JLA did to Batman. Did you catch that part? Well,
yeah.
Well, yeah, Batman walked in on the JLA using magic to wipe Dr. Light's memory.
Right.
Because he was just too raving, maniacal. You know, they weren't going to unleash him back in the public or put him in prison where he'd escape. So they wiped his memory. And they knew Batman wasn't going to approve to that whenever he walked in on him doing it. So what'd they do then? They wiped Batman's memory.
But it begs the question, why not keep doing it? Why not wipe everybody's memory? You know? So that there was just one person.
I think
knew.
Everyone's scared of Batman in the JLA. Everyone is petrified of him, or at least that's the way they've played him in
right.
the past few years. So it's going to be very interesting. The way that Batman and Superman have been trusting each other lately in their own series, I wouldn't be surprised if everyone was talking about the speculation of the big countdown event. If Batman and Superman, and maybe the return of Hal Jordan, who knows what side he's going to be on, but I think there's going to be a major schism down the JLA membership and the rosters. I could see that happening. It'd be a big fight.
Well, it just makes me sad because I remember Happy Batman from the Super Friends.
Adam West.
Remember when everybody loved Batman and he would smile? And, well, That guy's dead.
It's true, dude.
I say that tongue in cheek, of course, but it's just one of those things where you hate to see, you know, that's like the big issue because it's never going to get settled.
Yeah.
They're not going to, Batman's not going to whack Superman, and Superman's not going to whack Batman. It's mm-hmm. just.
Well, we'll see. I'm really anxious to see what happens with Hal Jordan because he's the wild card. He can make anything happen. Whichever side, if this does become a battle lines, whichever side Hal Jordan's on is, the other side's in trouble.
Well, and this thing too, you know, kind of to tie back to the Stan Lee interview. When we were talking with him about costumes and how important they are, I think it's cool that Hal Jordan's coming back, and I'm glad they're fixing his uniform. Because I always thought he looked like he had escaped from ballet class. That was the one thing I hated about the old Green Lantern costume.
The ultra-tight tights.
Well, the leotard. He was wearing leotards. Going to do Swan Lake, are you? You know, so I'm glad they're fixing that.
One of the many things that people were talking about on the message boards is Wanted.
Okay.
And I had a pretty dramatic reaction.
Yes, you did.
On last Sunday's show. But I think that it was valid. What do you think?
I told you then, you know, and with a couple of days to think about it, I still think I'm in the camp that likes it.
Now listen, why do you like it? Because to me, it was leading us up to getting our expectations going in one of many directions. Either the main character was going to become a hero,
right?
Which a lot of people thought he was going to twist at the end, make the right decisions, change history, or some kind of event was going to come around that validated the struggle. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the thing I thought about
it's hard to talk about.
Right. Originally, I thought, like you thought, that he was going to end up being a hero. And I thought he was going to, since he's killed, you know, basically everybody, that he could, you know, here's a chance to start over, to not necessarily be a wimp, but not be a villain. Mm-hmm. And so when that didn't happen, at first I was kind of mad, you know, because mm-hmm. I was like, that's not what's supposed to. But then I went back and I thought about it, and I realized I don't think he's making fun of the fanboys. I don't think he's trying to spit on his readers. What I do think he's trying to say is, and that's why I said Fight Club at the time. You remember in Fight Club there was a scene where he takes a gun, he grabs the guy, and he takes his driver's license, and he tells the mm-hmm. guy to go do what you want to do.
Right.
And I'm going to check on you.
Yes.
That's basically what I felt like it was saying. It's that you don't have to be what I am. You don't have to be a villain. But you can't sit there and take what life has been giving you anymore.
Now, the guys on the message boards have made up a whole bunch of really good points.
Okay.
And that is the protagonist, the Eminem character on the in Wanted, never did anything original. He was led the whole time at the beginning, mm-hmm. as explained in the final issue, by his mother and what his mom did to him to make him become such a wimp.
Right.
When he finally did start being more like his father and become a villain and got into the world, he was just being led around by these villains.
Right.
And then at the end, when his dad does come back, he's just led around by him. He never acts originally. That promise of seeing some kind of change in a character, something that I guess as Americans we're just used to in classic Hollywood.
Right.
It never happened. I guess it's original in its in the fact that it doesn't change. And that is good enough for people.
But see, I think there was a decision made. Because I think when he decides to do what they ask him to do, he has it laid out in front of him. He's like, I could go on. I could go back and do what I did before. And he says no.
Hmm. Yeah.
And he has the power. I mean, because honestly, he could have killed the fox right then.
Yeah.
And gone on and done something else.
But, I mean, are morals negligible in that story? I mean, there isn't really any. It isn't a morality tale, but is there any good versus evil? Well, it's evil versus evil, and evil wins?
Yeah. I think we're so used to there's a good and evil, and at the end, the evil's supposed to get buried, and it's not supposed to come out on top, and basically.
Because here's the deal. I know there's not going to be, what is it, number 6, right? It's over. I know there won't be a 7. And he said on our show he's not going to do any more.
Right.
That just makes me angry because the story isn't finished. Something is going to happen to that character in fictional universe that I want to see. Because if he keeps on doing what he's doing, there's more to tell. And the fact that he's not going to tell it anymore just makes me mad. And you say he's not insulting the reader. But that last page, dude.
The last page is heavy, but I think that's the point, is that it's here's what's happening if you're just sitting at home, not doing anything with your life.
Mm. Yeah. I guess. And he's saying if you're reading comics just sitting there, you're not doing anything.
Well, see, I don't make the broad generality of if you're reading any comics, you suck, and I'm taking your money, and he.
If you're just reading my comics.
I think it's just if you're being passive, you know. Get up and do something.
I guess so. What else have you been reading, man?
Well, I haven't had a chance to read because after reading Wanted, I've started my own supervillain thing. And I'm going to kill you all.
Oh, no. Some comics that are coming out today.
Yes.
We Three.
Can't wait for that.
Have you read 1 and 2?
Yes.
What did you think?
I love it.
Amazing,
I can't wait for 3.
Best layouts of just about any comic I've ever seen.
Well, not only that, I think just not only great script, great art, just great, not even a great idea yet.
Yes.
But it just, every now and then, and I think I said this once before, every now and then an idea comes up that's just so original that you're like, well, why the hell can't everybody do this every month?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it always, you know, you got Superman, you got Batman, you got Spider-Man, you got Avengers, you got JLA, and you got 3,000 ripoffs of those 5 books every month. And then a book like that comes out, and you're like, hey, cool, where's this been?
You know? Here's another one. Conan number 12 comes out today. You a Conan fan?
No.
Have you ever been?
Nope.
See, I read about 4 or 5 of the Bronze Age Conan books.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good stuff. Very violent. And when I was a kid, that was awesome. This is excellent, dude.
Well, I hear it's really good.
It's Kurt Busiek, and it's awesome.
People who are reading it are raving about it and telling me I need to be reading this book. I just can't get past Arnold. Every time I pick up a Conan book, I say, it's Arnold. He's going to be doing Conan. It's like, I will save the Hyborian Age for California.
All right, we got Why the Last Man, number, let's see here, number 30 comes out. Have you read any of that?
That's another book I missed, totally.
Great Vertigo story. It's about the last man on Earth. Can't recommend it any higher.
Well, not only that, you know, I hear it's being made into a movie,
uh-huh.
which is going to be excellent. And it's a good problem to have, the problem we have in the comics industry right now. There's a lot of good books out.
Mm-hmm.
Read them. Read them, please.
Avengers Earth's Mightiest Hero number 6 comes out today.
Okay.
Have you been reading that?
No, I'm reading New Avengers and Director's Cut. And I'm so confused. I don't know what Avengers I'm reading. Ultimates and...
Earth's Mightiest Heroes is great. I mean, it doesn't help with any of the confusion with all the different universes because it's just like, you know, a 15th universe that they're fighting in. But it's the retelling of Stan Lee's old first few arcs of Avengers.
Which I love.
Redone modern day with modern dialogue and modern art, and it's excellent. We talked about Marvel Team-Up being a great title. If you're a Stan Lee fan, you're checking out the show because you love Stan Lee. This is another one. If you really love and respect those old Avengers... Which seemingly Brian Michael Bendis doesn't.
Yes.
But if you do, then number 6 comes out today. I recommend you pick it up.
And tune in Sunday to hear Scott eat those words.
Oh, now he loves me, man.
Oh, of course.
All right, let's see here. Fantastic Four, number 522. Very soon, it seems that Mike Ringo and Mark Waid will be leaving the title.
Yes.
And J. Michael Straczynski will be on it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you as scared as I am that he will do some of the things to my favorite characters in Fantastic Four that he has done to Peter Parker in Spider-Man?
Well, are you basically saying you don't want Norman Osborn coming and sexing people up?
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, here's the thing. I don't see Norman getting involved. I don't agree with what happened, but I understand what he was doing. And Straczynski is a great writer.
Yeah.
JMS is a great writer, so I'm willing to see what he's going to do.
I'm going to buy it. Oh, that's not the point. No, absolutely. JLA Classifieds number 3 comes out today, too. Have you read any of the Classifieds?
No, I haven't.
All right, well, those are all excellent. It's Grant Morrison.
I don't know how I buy $100 worth of comics every week and haven't read...
All these that I'm talking...
I know. That's what am I reading?
I don't know, dude.
I'm reading Lil Hot Stuff and The Adventures of Betty and Veronica. Is that what's going wrong?
I guess so, dude. Well, we are all out of time. Thank you so much for hanging with us as we had to round up some of our favorite comic book titles there. But I hope you enjoyed the Stan Lee interview as much as we did.
And be here Sunday.
Be here Sunday. Brian Michael Bendis live. Sunday after that's the Super Bowl, so we're going to take a little break.
You got it.
But I got to make my thank yous. Thank you so much, Oliver.
Thank you.
Thank you, Britta, our associate producer. Thank you, Stan the Man Lee. Can't get any better than that. Thank you, YT Comics. Thank you, KTCU, FM 88.7 The Choice. Thank you so much, Funimation Productions. This has been Fanboy Radio,
the voice of comics and 30 minutes of Stan Lee and 30 minutes of filler.
Fanboy Radio is brought to you with a donation from Y2 Comics. Y2 Comics, located at 5276 Trail Lake Drive in Fort Worth, can be reached at 817-263-5888. And from Funimation Productions, the creators of the Dragon Ball Z series, Kitty Grade, Lupin the Third, Fruits Basket, Blue Gender, and many more. For more information about Funimation Productions, you can find them at Funimation.net. I'm Britta, and for Scott and Oliver, this has been Fanboy Radio.